Behind the Arc. A look around the country in college basketball. Behind the Arc. Hear about the week's biggest storylines. From blue bloods to mid-majors. Go in depth on the week's biggest matchups, bracketology, and which small conference schools should be on your radar. Behind the Arc. Here's your host, Joel Silverberg.
Welcome to the Behind the Arc podcast. My name is Joel Silverberg. I appreciate you taking the time to check out the podcast. And it's late Wednesday night, about 11:30 Eastern time. Just got done watching the Maryland-Minnesota game. We're going to talk about Tennessee and Arkansas coming up in just a moment. And we'll recap LSU and Florida as well and take a look at what kind of happened earlier in the midweek action around the bubble coming up in the second segment. But oh my goodness, Maryland and Minnesota. Maryland down by 17, trailed by 8 in the final 2 minutes, rallies, only gives up 1 point over the final 205 to Minnesota, a team that I had kind of counted Minnesota out from last week. If you caught the last episode of the podcast, that I thought the Golden Gophers were done. They are totally done now. There's no tournament hope whatsoever, barring a remarkable, unthinkable run in the Big Ten tournament coming up. Maryland down by 17, and Daryl Morsell comes up with a three-pointer basically from the edge of the M logo at center court and just drops it for a dagger right there at Minnesota. Just a monster three-pointer, and Maryland completes an improbable comeback. They trailed by 16 at the half, as many as 17 in the game. And Maryland kind of does this. You know, they seem to bury themselves early. They come back. They're tough. They're resilient. They're relentless. They're tenacious. They have a fantastic team. So much talent. Anthony Cowan Jr. We mentioned Morsell, who can hit clutch threes. And, of course, Jalen Smith, one of the best big men in the country. But they have talent in Maryland right now. And Mark Turgeon's got a really good basketball team. And that was just an insane finish. And so if you've stayed up to watch it, Hell Maryland in Minnesota, as I like to call it. Please forgive the pun, but insanity going on right now. What a big game in the Big Ten. Just one of three games on Wednesday night that featured ranked teams. Penn State hit a three-pointer in the final minute as well to down Rutgers. Rutgers trailed by as many as 21 in the game, rallied, took the lead in the final minute just for Penn State to go down, and Miles Dredd hit a three-pointer within the last minute to give Penn State a one-point win, and then Villanova took care of business against St. John's. So that's the ranked top 25 action for games on Wednesday, but that Maryland-Minnesota game, definitely worth staying up for. So if you got to stay up for the last home stretch there, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If you saw the highlights, I think you were still in for a treat considering that three-pointer by Daryl Morsell. So Maryland with another big win. And that means, because of the two-game edge that the Terps now have atop the Big Ten, that means Saturday they're playing for a regular season title. So for Maryland, that is just a really big deal. They have not won an outright conference championship since they won the national title back in like 2001. So it's been a while. It was back when Maryland was an ACC team. So right now, Maryland 13-4 in conference play. Penn State and Michigan State both 11-6. So for Maryland, with three games remaining in Big Ten play, if the Terps can beat Michigan State at home this Saturday, Maryland is going to win the Big Ten regular season title. So, or at least guarantee a share of it. A lot can happen. Penn State could actually still catch up, hypothetically, if the Nittany Lions were to win out. If Maryland was to lose out, they would finish with a tie atop the leaderboard, and then Penn State would technically actually have the head-to-head tiebreaker for Big Ten tournament seeding purposes because the Nittany Lions beat the Terps later on, earlier in the season. But Maryland, in opportunity with Michigan State, Rutgers, and then Michigan, none of those games are gimmies by any means. But I think with the way that the Terps play, you like their chances to get one. Penn State having to go to Iowa and then host Michigan State in their next two games, it would be tough. I would be surprised to see Penn State win out and Maryland lose out. But what we're looking at right now is that the Terps have put themselves in great position to win the Big Ten regular season title, take the number one seed going into the Big Ten tournament. It's been a great season for Maryland and just another wild finish that has added to an already pretty miraculous season for Mark Turgeon's team and the Maryland Terrapins. So Tennessee and Arkansas, as we get back on track, and this is why a lot of you are here. Of course, appreciate you listening to the podcast. I'm at Joel Silverberg on Twitter, at Sports Radio WNML. Just had to get that mention in there because that game ended about 5 minutes before I started the podcast. I was getting ready, getting set up, getting ready to talk Tennessee, Arkansas. I was checking in on the Maryland game and decided I might need to catch this as it's happening live. So that was a lot of fun, and I appreciate you bearing with me there for the first few minutes of this edition of Behind the Arc. But Tennessee and Arkansas. Arkansas jumped out ahead early and kind of looked like Tennessee was basically what I think you'd expect. It's going to be a tough game for Tennessee on the road. Arkansas jumped out to a monster 14-1 run to start the game. So Tennessee going more than, you know, going nearly 5 minutes before it makes its first field goal. And the Volunteers, I thought, responded nicely moving forward beyond that. Tennessee was able to close the gap in the second half. And so Tennessee started out with that 14-1 run for Arkansas that ended up being the difference at halftime. So Tennessee's down 13 early. It was down 13 at the half. Tennessee closed the gap to 2 points to 45-43. Then what happened? Arkansas got a 3-point play. Jordan Bowden missed an open jumper. Desi Stills went down and knocked down a three. And then things kind of took off from there. And Mason Jones just does what Mason Jones does, and that's score a lot of points and can do it in a variety of ways and finding more and more ways to score. He was hitting contested shots, can hit contested fadeaways, and then, you know, pivoting inside the paint, faking to the outside, and then just finding a leaner as he's trying to get that finger roll to go in. So Mason Jones just continues to be a fantastic player in the SEC this year. And it's not, if it's not for that 5-game skid, if Arkansas is realistically competing for even a top 4 seed in the SEC tournament, you're talking about Mason Jones potentially being the SEC player of the year. That's how good he's been. He's probably off the radar for some people because A, Arkansas is not Kentucky, and B, Arkansas goes through this 5-game skid because Isaiah Joe's not there. Now, if Mason Joe has another 30-point game and Arkansas wins a big game during that 5-game skid, then okay, maybe we're talking about Mason Jones being the conference player of the year. Instead, we're talking about Arkansas just getting back on the bubble because it's 1-2 straight after a 5-game skid, with Isaiah Joe being back after having knee surgery earlier this season, and wondering, okay, can the Razorbacks actually pull this off? And Joe Lunardi, as of now, hasn't updated his bracketology yet. Since Monday, he had Arkansas on the bubble going into the weekend, dropped them off even though they beat Missouri. And again, at that point, you're looking at a team that's 1-5 in its last six. Okay, you got Isaiah Joe back, but you beat Missouri. Like, who cares? And Tennessee is not going to be this resume-defining win, especially since Arkansas was at home. That's not a quadrant one win for Arkansas. It would have been a quadrant one win for Tennessee if the Vols had come away out of Bud Walton Arena winning that game. But instead, it's Arkansas getting the win, so back-to-back conference wins over non-quadrant one opponents, but still taking care of business, and obviously a significantly better team when Isaiah Joe is on the floor. And that's going to mean a lot to Arkansas, and that's going to matter to the committee. It's not going to guarantee that Arkansas gets in, but it will show, okay, this team was essentially a 5-loss team without Isaiah Joe. Then they lost with Isaiah Joe. Then they lost 5 straight without him on the floor. He comes back and they immediately start winning again. So if Arkansas is able to pull something together and actually get to that 19-20 win mark, maybe even beyond that, depending on what happens in the SEC tournament, then you realistically start talking about Arkansas being a tournament team again. And I thought Arkansas was down for the count. I didn't think there was a chance, no chance, that Arkansas was getting in after they lost to Florida last week. But I also was not expecting Isaiah Joe to come back as soon as he did. I knew that they were hopeful that he could come back by March. I wasn't expecting him to come back with 3 games remaining in the month of February. And so Arkansas ends the month at Georgia on Saturday. Next week, they'll host LSU and then travel to Texas A&M. The Aggies have been playing better of late. Texas A&M now 8-7 in conference play this year, which I thought they were going to be towards the bottom of the SEC, considering the losses they suffered from last year, a first-year head coach, and then everything that happened with TJ Sparks at the beginning of the season. So the going to Georgia, beating an opponent on the road would help Arkansas a lot. It always helps when you can beat opponents away from home. That win over LSU, if you could get a win over LSU, that would help Arkansas tremendously. But if we play this out on paper and say that Arkansas beats Georgia, loses to LSU, beats Texas A&M on the road, you picked up a couple of road wins, lost to the better team in your conference, Arkansas would be in some pretty heavy consideration, especially if the committee were to look at it and say, okay, so Isaiah Joe was gone, they lost 5 straight and then got him back and they went 4-1 down the stretch, that would be kind of a big deal to the tournament committee. They would definitely take that into account. I don't know if it would guarantee anything, but we'll see. For Tennessee, any thin hope that I think Vol fans were holding on to for the NCAA tournament going into this game is definitely gone. And for Tennessee, it was just unfortunate to see how everything escalated, because Tennessee was able to fight back and make it close again. Mason Jones just kind of went off, and Isaiah Joe still put up big numbers, and Desi Stills is coming off the bench. And having Jimmy Witt, he's a really quality, high efficiency type player on offense, but he really does a lot for Arkansas on the defensive side of the ball. And I thought he did an excellent job manning up on Santiago Vescovi, not allowing Vescovi to get really quality looks from the floor, held Vescovi to just 6 points on the night, 0-4 from three, also had five turnovers. And then the turnovers continue to be an issue for Tennessee. They only turned it over twice in the second half. Much more efficient basketball. Tennessee just couldn't hit shots, just 4 of 17 from behind the arc, and Tennessee didn't shoot well from the line, just 63% from the charity stripe. And for Jordan Bowden, another solid game, 19 points, but was in foul trouble early. And so it's little things that kind of pile up in games like this with Tennessee where, okay, Bowden's playing well again, but now he's in foul trouble. And so you have to take him out in the first half, and you have to be careful with him in the second half. And you're not getting a lot of production out of your backcourt outside of that, because Josiah Jordan James, scoreless in 25 minutes, 0 of 6 from the floor, 3 assists, a turnover. Vescovi, no assists, 5 turnovers. The inside-out, high ball movement basketball that Rick Barnes wants to see just didn't happen. Tennessee is known for piling up assists. It had 8 against Arkansas. Arkansas is the worst rebounding team in the SEC. Tennessee didn't have that great of a rebounding advantage, and John Fulkerson only collected 5 boards. So I think for Tennessee, there was an opportunity there. And again, Arkansas was going to make adjustments, and it has found a way to make up for being a bad rebounding team. They find ways to pressure teams on the outside defensively. They get going in transition. They are efficient on offense. So, Arkansas makes up for it in other ways, and it's not like they're a terrible defensive team. But obviously that there was some exposure, I think, especially with Isaiah Joe not being in there. They're big in the backcourt. They're not great in the front court. And for Tennessee, unable to take advantage of that this time around. So just not a great game for Tennessee. The Vols coming up short, 86-69 in the loss to Arkansas. Mason Jones kind of catching all the headlines, 37 points in 37 minutes. He was 11 of 19 from the floor, and just a win for Arkansas where they had a lot to play for. And I think maybe many had given up on the Razorbacks and probably shouldn't have. And that goes for me as well. And the Razorbacks are going to have an opportunity to be the Razorbacks are going to have an opportunity to be considered for the NCAA tournament, especially if they can pick up a couple of wins here down the stretch to close out the season. So Tennessee falls 86-69 to the Arkansas Razorbacks on the road. Tennessee will have to bounce back against Florida this upcoming weekend. And the Gators, really impressive win at home over LSU. You remember the last time these two teams played, LSU got the late bucket to go ahead. Florida had an opportunity late when it really looked like LSU should have put it away. Florida appeared to have the game-tying bucket to send the game to overtime. It was reviewed that they did not get the ball off in time, didn't get the shot off. Florida came out, beat LSU 81-66. The Gators were really efficient from the floor. They shot 54% from the field, 9 of 21 from behind the arc, and only shot 7 foul shots. It didn't matter. They were so good from the field. None of that mattered. Were really strong offensively. Keontae Johnson put up 25 points, 11 of 15 from the floor. So Johnson getting a big game. Florida gets a big win over LSU in SEC play on a night where Kerry Blackshear just didn't have his best stuff. Just going out for 8 and 8 on the night. Keontae Johnson also had 11 rebounds, 5 assists, a pair of steals, and a pair of blocks, doing it all for Florida. Andrew Nembhard added 17 points. Scotty Lewis had 18 on 8 of 12 shooting. So Florida being highly efficient and getting a lot of guys involved on the offense, and one of them wasn't Kerry Blackshear. So if I had told you that Florida was going to beat LSU by double digits and that 3 Florida starters were going to score in double figures, you would have thought, oh, Blackshear's got to have a double-double, another double-double in that game, or at least score in double figures. Didn't happen. 8 points, 8 rebounds for the transfer from Virginia Tech. And now the Vols get ready to take on the Florida Gators this upcoming weekend at Thompson Bowling Arena. So that game is going to be set for a 2 o'clock tip-off at TBA. You can catch all the pregame coverage at 1:30 coming up on our station on The Sports Animal, 99.1 FM, 990 AM. We'll have the Tennessee Tip-Off Show beginning at 1:30. Bob Kessling and Burt Bertelkamp will have the call, and you can hear that on our airwaves on The Sports Animal with Tennessee and Florida coming up at 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. We'll come back. What else is happening around the bubble and what's happening with some ranked teams as well? Got that Michigan State-Iowa game earlier in the week. Big SEC game that happened on Tuesday. We'll discuss that and more, looking at Joe Lunardi's bracketology from ESPN from earlier in the week. All that coming up on this edition of the Behind the Arc podcast on The Sports Animal. Thank you again for checking out the Behind the Arc podcast. Again, I'm at Joel Silverberg on Twitter. Check out at Sports Radio WNML to follow our station and to get updates on all things sports, all things Vols, so much more than just college basketball there. But I appreciate you listening to the Behind the Arc podcast for all things college hoops right here. Again, I'm at Joel Silverberg on Twitter. If you're listening to the podcast on our app, it's the Sports Radio WNML app. On our website, 99.1thesportsanimal.com. You can listen on Apple Podcasts. You can rate, review, and subscribe there. Give it a 5-star review would certainly help a lot. And again, more content coming throughout the course of the season as we get closer and closer to Championship Week, closer and closer to Selection Sunday. Earlier in the week, speaking of Selection Sunday, that was not a good look for Duke on Tuesday night. The Blue Devils fell to Wake Forest 113-101 in double overtime, and Duke just not having its best day, shooting less than 43% from the field, going just 6 of 23 from behind the arc, was really efficient from the free throw line, and that is something that hurt Duke a lot in close games last year. They weren't great from the line, they weren't great from long range, and you're seeing some of that in some of these big games here, but Duke, especially with players like Trey Jones, have done very well at cashing in on free throws. It obviously paid dividends with that North Carolina game towards the beginning of this month, but Wake Forest really made Duke pay for it. The Demon Deacons shot 50 free throws in that game on Tuesday night, were 37 of 50. You had Brandon Childress that hit the shot that forced overtime. Five Deacons, all five starters scored in double figures for Wake Forest. It is tied for the most points ever allowed by a Duke team under Mike Krzyzewski. And the thing is with Duke is I still think Duke's a really talented basketball team. Trey Jones has improved greatly. Vernon Carey Jr. is rightfully one of the best players in the country, rightfully a Wooden Award candidate. It's just, I think what we're seeing with Duke at times, and he's not getting that type of discussion because he's not consistently putting up all these big numbers, just 10-7 in 19 minutes after fouling out, spent a lot of time in foul trouble, a lot of Duke starters and getting into the reserves, just the fouls really piled up in a hurry. And when you shoot 50 free throws, chances are you've got a handful of key players on the other team getting into foul trouble. And that was what Wake Forest did. It went after Duke. It pushed the tempo. It was very aggressive. It forced a lot of fouls and it got the job done at home. And for Duke, I think it's just been a matter of questioning, well, what's been the deal here? Because now Duke has a home loss to Stephen F. Austin. It has a road loss to Clemson, which is not going to the tournament. Had the loss against Louisville, which is a top 15 team, and lost to NC State last week before losing on the road at Wake Forest. And I'm sure for the Demon Deacons, there was a lot of exercising that needed to be done based on what happened when these two teams played last March in a really, really close game that Wake Forest probably should have won with that game-winning shot hitting every part of the rim before falling out. But I think for Duke, there's been a serious lack of consistency, and I don't know if it's a matter of players just not getting up to play against some of these opponents, but you look at the resume right now with NC State just lost to North Carolina earlier in the week. More on that in just a second, but outside of Louisville, none of Duke's losses are against teams that are going to the NCAA tournament that I can say for certain. Not sure about NC State. NC State's a bubble team, but when you consider a Duke team that would have five losses through the month of February, you would think, okay, who are those losses going to be to? Well, you know, you've got the big game at the beginning of the season with Kansas, and you've got Michigan State there on the schedule. You have to go to Michigan State. And then, of course, the ACC. You think North Carolina, Louisville, Virginia, the reigning national champion. You'd think, okay, those are some candidates that could give Duke five losses at this time of the year. And we've seen Duke go on runs in the tournament when they've had more losses than this. So it's not anything to hit the panic button about. But what is concerning is that there's this constant set of losses to teams that aren't going to the tournament, and you've got a bubble team in NC State, and then you've got one tournament team in Louisville, and it's been kind of odd. Now, I should say not going to the tournament. Stephen F. Austin is likely going to go to the tournament, but again, as a conference champion of a one-and-done league, a one-bid league, I should say. So it's not a matter of that Stephen F. Austin is not a good team, but there is no reason for Duke to lose to the Lumberjacks at home, regardless of what time of year it is. And that's the point I'm trying to make, is that Stephen F. Austin, okay, a really good team, but that here's the thing. If Stephen F. Austin doesn't win its conference tournament coming up in a week or so, it's not going to the NCAA tournament. It's not good enough to get in as an at-large team. Clemson is not good enough to get in as an at-large team. NC State is hoping to get in as an at-large team. And as of Monday, they were in Joe Lunardi's last four in, but then followed that up after losing to Florida State. It stayed in the tournament field, but then lost to North Carolina. And that's not a good North Carolina team. And then you throw in the loss to Wake Forest. So now Duke has lost two of its last three. Wake Forest, by the way, second to last in the ACC, actually would have been tied for last had Duke won that game. Wake Forest just a game ahead of the Tar Heels for dead last, for second to last in the ACC standings, 5-12 in the conference, 12-15 on the season, and just not a good basketball team this year, and no reason for Wake Forest to have beaten Duke, especially considering that Duke beat the Demon Deacons by 31 the last time these two teams played earlier in the year. So Duke has now lost two of its last three. It's 23-5 on the year. It was considered a two seed in Lunardi's bracketology earlier in the week. I would think the Blue Devils are going to drop. You see Florida State moving up to a two seed already. And when you look around at the three seeds, okay, you've got Louisville, which just lost to Florida State. You have Villanova, which seems to be trending upward. You look around the rest of the projected bracket. Seton Hall, I don't know if that would be the team to move up. And then Creighton, which is playing at a really high level. We've spoken a couple of times in the last few podcast episodes about how good the Blue Jays have been and how Greg McDermott might be the Big East coach of the year. But for Duke, those are the type of losses that maybe they're not going to hurt you. Maybe they don't affect how you play in the tournament. It's a program that knows how to get up with a coaching staff that knows how to get up when tournament time rolls around. But it can be the difference in being a one or a two seed as opposed to a three or a four seed. And for Duke, I think that is a big deal when you consider how open this tournament field is. And it's not even so much the first round matchups. It's looking beyond that where, okay, if you're a three seed, then you're having to play a six. And look at how dangerous some of those six seeds are. You're talking about right now, if we're just going by what Lunardi had earlier on Monday this week, Arizona, which is a team that with guys like Nico Mannion, Zeke Nagy, Josh Green, three guys that at one point this year were projected to all be first round picks in this summer's NBA draft. BYU, which we just saw take down Gonzaga, you know how dangerous they are. Ohio State, which at one point looked like it could be one of the best teams in the country, that it was next in line to take over the number one spot in the AP poll. And Caleb Wesson at one point looked like he was going to win the Wooden Award. And then you've got Iowa with Luka Garza, what he could do on the interior, Joe Weiskamp and McCaffrey, and that team that can get so hot at times on offense and is used to playing big competition, big time games week in and week out, going up against Duke would not be intimidating for the Hawkeyes. Now say Duke drops all the way back to a four seed. Okay, well then you're talking about having to face a five seed in the second round. West Virginia, which has been on a skid, but has some talent. Oscar Tshiebwe, Udoka Azubuike had some really nice things to say about him the last time that those two teams played. Michigan, which at one point was a top five team this year, still has a lot of talent, hasn't been playing well lately, kind of in a similar scenario as Ohio State. Colorado, which has been a really big surprise out of the Big 12. And then Michigan State, which, okay, it's been disappointing for Michigan State at times this year. Now, you consider everything that that team has had to play through, the stuff that they've had to deal with, and you still know that Michigan State is very talented and that Cassius Winston and Xavier Tillman, they're going to keep you in just about any game. And we've seen Tom Izzo time and time again, have a somewhat questionable regular season and then go on some big tournament run. And right now, Michigan State is a five seed. That'd be fairly favorable. So just things to look out for with Duke moving forward and see if the Blue Devils can kind of get back on track. They still have to go to Virginia at the end of this month. They've got another game coming up against NC State, so an opportunity to get payback on the Wolfpack for that one. And then they will end the regular season with the rematch against North Carolina. And right now, I know that North Carolina just got a nice win over NC State, nice by North Carolina standards for this year. I just don't see that game being as competitive as it was the first time around. That should be a win for Duke. But really, all three of these should be wins for Duke. But when you talk about Virginia and NC State, teams that are going to be in big-time desperation mode with an opportunity to get a tournament-boosting win for their resume chances. And that's right now, that's really what NC State and Virginia are attempting to do at this point in time. Speaking of Michigan State, with the Spartans getting that win over Iowa, I thought that was a really important win for Sparty, and I didn't think their tournament hopes were really in any sort of question, but the Big Ten standings, they're all jostling for tournament seeding right now, and there's a lot of that going on when you consider how the standings shape out. I mean, going into Tuesday, there was a five-way tie for third place when you look at Maryland, then Michigan State, then Penn State, Illinois, Wisconsin, all around that. And actually a five-way tie for second place. And so Michigan State jumps into second. And now you've got Penn State, Illinois, Wisconsin all at 10-6. Iowa drops to 10-7 as play continues into the week. Maryland, of course, sitting at 12-4 with the game against Minnesota on Wednesday night. But that's just what's been so crazy about the Big Ten and why it's been so deep is you have Michigan State that has taken its lumps. It's taken some losses at times this year, but it's still playing at a high level and it's having to play tough competition week in and week out. And now you turn around, look at it, Michigan State, after dropping three straight games and having that tough slide where it lost to Wisconsin, Penn State, and Michigan, now the Spartans have won three of four. And the one loss against a really good Maryland team with Anthony Cowan and Jalen Smith. You got the win against Nebraska, okay. That was a nice Iowa win to be able to defend your home court. And for the first time this season, Michigan State won a game in which it trailed at halftime. The Spartans were down by six, came out, started to really control that game, and really took it to Iowa in the second half. So a good job by the Spartans getting a big game out of Cassius Winston. And with Xavier Tillman not necessarily being at his best, but really impressive for Rocket Watts to do what he did in that game, scoring a career-high 21 points. And despite Tillman being held to just 6 points, not getting a whole lot out of the front court, Aaron Henry came up in a big way, showing off that athleticism that we've seen from him at times this year. But Watts stepping up in Tillman's ineffective offensive night, and then Cassius Winston does the rest. The Big Ten's all-time assist leader had 9 more on Tuesday night in the win over Iowa, and then 20 points to go with it, seeing good contributions on the bench, especially on defense. And I thought Michigan State did a really nice job defensively at handling Luka Garza there in the second half, kind of allowed him to get his throughout the course of the night, and it helps when Joe Wieskamp just had a horrible night offensively, 1 of 8 from the floor, 0 of 5 from 3. Iowa couldn't get anything going from outside, but Michigan State's perimeter defense had a lot to do with that. NC State, so at the beginning of the week, we saw that they were the last team in Joe Lunardi's last four in. They got that monster win over Duke last week, followed it up with a tough loss to Florida State at home, and Lunardi kind of honored that. You know, it's still a tough Florida State team, and North Carolina State played well. Then the Wolfpack followed that up with a really bad loss to North Carolina. Again, the worst team in the ACC. I know it's North Carolina. I know it's the Tar Heels. That just was not good for NC State. That was one thing that the Wolfpack couldn't afford. And man, how about the scheduling by the conference? That's tough. At the beginning of the season, looking at it, in November, if you had said, okay, at one point, the Wolfpack are going to have to play Duke, Florida State, and then North Carolina in three consecutive games, that's just ruthless. That's horrible for NC State. But the thing is, they got the win over Duke. North Carolina ends up not being any good. And still, the Wolfpack are only able to go 1-2 in that three-game stretch. Would have been huge for them to get that win over North Carolina, really for the sake of avoiding the bad loss. So that's the worst part about it, is just North Carolina taking another bad loss on the resume when you've got teams like Richmond, UCLA, which is trending upward. Mississippi State was part of the first four out. They got a monster win over Alabama on Tuesday night in SEC play, which Alabama in the next four out as of Monday, probably going to drop out after taking another loss in a big conference game. John Petty getting injured, that's horrible for Alabama, but the losses are piling up to a point where I don't know how much more wiggle room there is for Alabama to realistically have a shot at the NCAA tournament. So with Mississippi State and UCLA trending upward, NC State taking that loss, that really hurts the Wolfpack and their chances to move forward in the bubble. And then one last bubble matchup from earlier in the week on Tuesday, had the chance to catch Oklahoma and Texas Tech. And Oklahoma punched the Red Raiders right in the mouth early, did it often. Texas Tech had kind of, sort of, not really a run there early in the second half to bring it back to single digits. But Oklahoma, big game from Austin Reeves. Thought he played really well. Brady Manick continues to do good things in the front court for them. And then, of course, Christian Doolittle continues to be their leader. He had 19 points in that game. And the Sooners got a really important win against Texas Tech, beating a ranked team. Technically a neutral site game. I look at it as a home game. They were playing in Oklahoma City at the Energy Arena, where the Chesapeake Energy Arena, where the Oklahoma City Thunder play. So Oklahoma gets the win there. Big stretch. They go to West Virginia. Mountaineers are sliding. This would be a great opportunity to pick up another quadrant one win for the Sooners. Then they have the rivalry rematch against Texas. The Sooners beat the Longhorns by 10 in Austin earlier this season, and then closing out the year at TCU. That's really a game that you just can't afford to take a loss. So Oklahoma, you think in best case scenario, if you maybe finish 19-12, I like Oklahoma's chances to get in. So a lot of bubble talk, a lot of bubble matchups. We've got a lot more coming up this week, but from what we've seen the last couple days, those are some interesting results, some things to pay attention to when we're talking about which power conference teams could have an opportunity to either move up or move out when looking at bracket projections as we get closer and closer to March. Thank you for tuning in to the Behind the Arc podcast. Really appreciate the time. I'm at Joel Silverberg on Twitter. Follow the station at Sports Radio WNML. Again, you can check out our website, 991thesportsanimal.com, for a ton of content on all things sports, all things Tennessee Volunteers, not just college hoops. We've got it all for you right there at the Sports Animal. So thank you so much for tuning in to the Behind the Arc podcast. We'll catch you next time on the Behind the Arc podcast.
Behind the Arc with Joel Silverberg on the Sports Animal.